Good evening. My name is Steve Kreitzer. I'll be with you until 12 o'clock midnight tonight. Special show planned for tonight. We have an interview with Dave of MDC. And we'll get into that right now, starting off with new music from MDC. Title track of their new album, Millions of Damn Christians, here on Turmoil.
Welcome aboard, non-believers, sinners, heathens, step right this way. Captain Dante at your service. Please hold on.
One of the first questions I'm going to ask you is the latest issue of Maximum Rock and Roll. You dressed up in drag. Is Dave going to be the next Divine?
Yeah. It's been fun. I've been doing all sorts of costumes and changing around. I got a glam outfit. I got an Elvis outfit. I got a Divine outfit. I got an Elizabeth Taylor outfit. I find pushing the gender role-playing gap as being kind of fun and actually more revolutionary than getting up there and shouting, you know, smash the state, or, you know. Right.
One of your sort of undressable episodes, this is from Hannes of KGB, said you guys had some problems in Germany when you undressed on stage and you sort of lost the Gordon at that point.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot freer attitude over there than here.
Yeah, I went to Denmark and we did nude mud baths in Christiania, which is a great place in Copenhagen. And then the whole idea of the clothes just seemed ridiculous. And then we came right back to Germany and did a couple of last shows. And I started taking off my clothes on stage just to see what would happen. And people would generally go crazy. They just couldn't believe it. Kind of like shock, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun to do things that people aren't going to predict or foresee what you're going to do. Or...
So it's around that time that Gordon decided to leave the band and you guys got Eric?
And... Yeah. You know, Gordon's a great guitar player and I consider him a nice friend. I think the road got to him, you know, being in a marginal punk band that makes a few hundred dollars a night generally, you know, sometimes $400, $500, $600, sometimes more than that, but you know, time you pay all your phone bills and everything else, you know, the road can be rough. You know, you're living on, you know, French fries and juice and just cramped together. And some people not everyone's made for that, really.
You seem to enjoy it though.
Yeah, I make the best of it. Road can be very, very fun. It can be taxing and terrible and cold and miserable. But you got to be kind of a. I'm just gregarious enough to enjoy the people, and even if the circumstances, like you got a car that's breaking down, or you know the terrible things that can happen, being busted in foreign countries, which happened to us in Canada. You can't always control what's going to happen to you, but If you go at it with a good attitude, you can have some fun.
No,
it's really one of the best, neatest things to do. You're exchanging your art and your culture and your music and your essence and yourself with people, and it's so great to go to some place, even like Europe, where people, the exchange is that you're there giving them your performance. And it's a beautiful way to travel.
Displaying your art, you had some problems with the new album, the cover, I heard. Printing was delayed for a few months.
Yeah. We had some old-fashioned printers there in California that Tom Flynn, who's doing our label, couldn't get a press for a few people, but it eventually went to Canada.
Just because of the cover, right?
Yeah, they thought it was blasphemous and anti-Christian.
That's around the same time Biafra was having his problems,
exactly,
too.
Same time.
There was like sort of a clampdown in San Francisco, which is supposed
to be
so open.
Well, there's not that many. Well, it wasn't San Francisco. Most of the printing got done by people down in L.A. There's like two or three main ones that do everybody's. From everyone who comes out of L.A. and California, Circle Jerks, Tentacles, they all come out of three or four different places. And that's that. They can be very conservative and very afraid. L.A. is kind of a redneck city, and Orange County and the suburbs there are some of the most reactionary places in the United States, and that's where Biafra was actually got his suit from. Mm-hmm.
Turkeys ever breed, ain't no turkey got to die for me. Well, swing to the east and swing to the west. Swing to the chicken that you love best. Come on down to the chicken swamp with me. Buck on Nugget, look at me, said NBC's okay with me. We learned how to let our chickens free. We birds of feathers, we stick together. We set our chickens free forever, so go ahead and let your chickens be. Got a seat in our carts and friends, and fancy bake those little chickadees. We'll swing to the east and swing to the west. We'll swing the chicken that you love best. Coming down to the chicken swamp with me. We'll swing to the east and swing to the west. Swing the chicken that you love best. Coming down to the chicken swamp with me.
Getting into the history of the band. How's a boy from Glen Cove wind up in Texas? And then on to San Francisco.
Oh,
just a brief history, if you can.
Okay. Basically, I was in a band called, when I got out of high school, called the Covers and the Solar Pigs. And we were into bluegrass music. In fact, Chicken Squawk was written like 1975. And I drifted around, went to a few different colleges, and went to the Rocky Mountains, did a log cabin 6 months stay, and kind of drifted on down to Austin, Texas, where I just found the music scene there to be pretty vital, and it was even pre-punk music scene, like 76 I got there about, and it was just when Blondie and Devo and the Runaways and Elvis Costello and Patti Smith and Devo and that was the new wave end of it, and then B-52s and Clash and things like X-ray specs, not X-ray specs, but 999 came through, and the Dead Boys came through, and that was just the punk part. Then just locally, was, you know, the Thunderbird Brothers, who made it real big, and there's Butch Hancock, and there's Alvin Crowe, and there's all these old shit kickers who just get up there in every country bar and play every night, and usually it's no admittance, and it's 75-cent Lone Star beers, and you know, for $3 or $4, you can, you know, catch some fun and action. It was really neat. So Austin, Texas, and then through seeing all those bands, a lot of people got hip to what was going on. Those bands, the most two inspiring to me were the Big Boys with Randy Biscuits and Chris, who's I can't think of the band he's in right now, and Gary Floyd and Buff Parrott and the Dicks. And just totally grand. There's the Offenders, who are really good too, and of course the Butthole Surfers, who are really great too. Very fertile scene. Yeah. Patti Smith came down and played in our little bar, and you know, all sorts of people came there. Mark from Devo, and it was just this really cool cooking place. And this is 77, 78, 79, Austin, Texas. And that's some in 79, I put a band together called The Stains. It was the guitar player of NBC, and it was the bass player of The Offenders. And it was eventually Al on drums, the last version of it. And that's when we cut John Wayne Was a Nazi, and that was 1981. And we sent some to Tim Yohannan and Joe Biafra, and they called us up and said they liked what they heard. You guys tour, we got a gig with the Good Kennedys, and we got a gig with Black Flag. It was Black Flag and DOA. Subhumans from British Canada, British Columbia, I mean, were traveling bands, and they, you know, it was the first bands I saw just living out of a van, making 400 every gig, and you know, and you really live in this thing, and you're pouring it out, and really that first, you know, inspiring, you know, inspiration to try to make it like that, because the other way was just sit in Austin, make demos, try to get them to people who would like them, you know, as opposed to the do-it-yourself method. Which touring with
was there any point at that time after seeing some of these bands making $400 a night that you said we're in the wrong business?
No, we were totally excited. This was very excitable days. This was 1980. We played with the Black Flag two nights in a row in Houston. We were just so charged up, so psyched up. I really was, you know. We put every last nickel, cent, penny into making 300 John Wayne Was a Nazi singles, and then getting a little tour with the Dicks for two gigs, one in San Francisco, actually three gigs, two in San Francisco, one with the Dead Kennedys, and then a one a week later with the Fuck Ups, and then a week later in LA. And you know, three gig tour, but you know, they were our gigs and we were going to them, and sure enough, we made it. And we were just totally turned on by what we saw. We saw hundreds and hundreds and thousands of kids. We played the Cuckoo's Nest, and we saw it play with the Kennedys in San Francisco, Mubuhe, and it was beautiful. It was just like, you know, just realizing the thousands of people and all the FM radios going, oh, millions of dead cops. Yeah. Oh, we need to do an interview. And just realizing there must be in California, and just right in the, you know, 50-mile radius of the Bay, around 30 FM college shows that are doing alternative programming. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm exaggerating, but it just seems like a lot. You can turn on the dial and find very unique things on the dial out there. And we were in Austin, Texas, just kind of like dying on the vine, you know, sitting around for that gig once every 3 weeks, which was great towards practicing and getting together as a unit and not being distracted. But, you know, it's playing to the same couple hundred people. And we wanted to tour the world. We always wanted to travel and meet lots of people. And so at that point, no. I was very excited, and we hocked our socks and did everything we could. We worked. I was pizza delivery. I did all sorts of crazy things to get the band to save its money to do its first album and to get a van and be able to do what we saw other bands doing. And that eventually happened in 82. And we moved to San Francisco that February 82 and got our album out by June. And the Maximum Rock and Roll people really helped us. They put us on the first cover of Maximum Rock and Roll. And we just spread, you know, word just spread on us like wildfire. It was a tight little scene, you know. And I was pen palling with Ian McKay, and I'd written to SSD Control. I even used to talk to Tesco V on the phone, you know, you just staying, you know, with talking to all the different network of people out there. And that's basically when, you know, that 82, we went on tour in June and we didn't stop until Christmas. In fact, we played New Year's in New York City and we went to Europe with the Kennedys, did 20 gigs over there with them. And we just pretty much did about 100 gigs in the North America. And we felt like a band.
Yeah.
And no, we weren't thinking, we were thinking, you know, this is the wrong business. We were thinking, go, go, go. We want to keep going. We want to hop on every star going. We want to play and we want to go.
Yeah.
As far as that feeling, then 83, we did the Rock Against Reagan tour and toured with the Crucifix and the Dicks and DRI and did a lot of gigs. We played at the nation's capital with the Dead Kennedys and a lot of nice crowds and a lot of connections got made. Got to meet a lot of interesting people in bands, Zero Defects. And then after that, it was like 84, and 84 was the Democratic Convention in San Francisco, and we went to Europe in the end of 83 and did about 3 or 4 months. We did Italy and Spain, and we did a lot of Germany, a lot of Holland, and Denmark. And we got back in 84, we did all the political things, and then it seemed like Reagan was winning the White House, and our guitar player spent less and less time with the band, and wanting to do his own thing, which was selling skateboards, and getting together, he got some money together from his parents, and he was trying to make something happen. And he just felt like maybe that was the highest plateau that we were gonna have, or that he feel like he wanted to pursue with us. And that's when he started thinking, maybe this is the wrong business, because he started thinking, you know, we talked to Dave, I tell you, you know, I like hardcore, but you really want to be knuckleheading around the country in a van the rest of your life, and you know, he just had a radically different feeling about what he wanted to do with his life, but like he wanted to turn music kind of into his hobby, and, you know, and work on making something happen with his life and with his situation. And then it became very difficult, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, trying to find a guitar player, trying to get it together, and he didn't quite make the decision so quick. It took him about a year to really come, you know, thinking about it, scheduled a few practices, and took a trip to Venezuela to visit his mom, and, you know what I mean, this band time just went by, and we worked on the Peace compilation in the interim, which, it's a 55 band compilation if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It's we've given about $15,000 in Peace compilation cash and album resources, and it's been real successful. And right now one of the projects we're doing is helping Debbie Gordon of Alternative Tentacles go to Guatemala and do a video there, and we've given to everything from Sane to the Nuclear Freeze to we played at the nuclear test site in Nevada this spring, and we help with paper hold the nuclear resistor, and we've given to Oxfam, we give Big Mountain, lots of different groups, about 30 or 35 altogether.
Words of peace.
life away and prepare to die. A living out of morning, shall learn from above. A top of fine boxes, only ones you love. Holding back tears, remember her kiss. As you die from cancer, people shake your fist. Tidal waves surrounding, restlessness astounding. Earthquakes surrounding, Eric's eyes sounding.
You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook and an interview with Dave of MDC.
Do you notice like a change in the bands nowadays? They don't seem to get involved as much as the older ones do. No, there's maybe one of two bands that really get involved, such as MDC does, and the Kennedys did.
Well, the whole nature of everything keeps changing and changing. A lot of ways, people just say, well, I think a lot of people really, 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 really know in their heart that, Reagan is a rubber-faced cunt, But just talking about it just seems real passé, I can get bored with political conversation. Just sometimes just like, it happened in Philly the night, this guy was just antagonizing me. He goes, I had a Jesse Jackson shirt on. He was like, the system sucks. A sellout black man for the Democratic Party, and you can buy that line. Just all these lines and cliches. And, a lot of people just get turned off, because they feel powerless. They go, yeah, they get infuriated. Yeah, it's got to change. It's not fair. You're right. And then you can't do anything about it. And it has a way of turning people into apathetic-minded souls. And I think a lot of the bands really want a good world, really want, a world, that's nuclear-free and clean, and, a lot of the things that people talk about, less 1984-ish. I think they don't think it's trendy to communicate about it. I don't think they have the ability to deal with it in a way that seems fresh, so they steer away from it.
I still think it's like some band's responsibility to at least, present some of the, atrocities still going on.
Yeah, I think it is too. Lately, we've just been putting on a show to just give people a good taste of music. And the politics of it is pretty evident. I've been doing this Divine and Elvis thing, and to me, it's even heavier and shocks people more than saying, support the Big Mountain Indians, Though I think it's important to support the Big Mountain Indians, if you know what I mean. We're doing everything in like a real left-handed way. It's almost in the way Damn Christians tries to come together. Less angry young man going, dead cops,
right.
Overthrow the system. And more cynical, but sincerely, anti-system, anti-the corruption, anti-all the waste. Thank you.
truth to their pleas, their demands and their cries. And we have to stand up to your keen and lies.
You masquerades dismembered, the atrocities all remembered. And you'll never steal, you'll never kill that culture.
Before conquistadors and Christians and Custer's last stand, the buffalo, eagle, and Navajo roam free on this land. Hitler's Germany, apartheid, Nicaragua's blood-drenched sand, the tears of all the women, the folly of men. Hold these prophecies to say, peace will come to Mother Earth's friends. The old wise ones taught love and respect before they passed on. And the young, they remember, and they sing spirit songs. Mr. Greed, Mr. Government, we all know you are wrong. The more you try to divide us, we grow together and strong. And we'll never die, you're mastering and dismembering us. You're torturing and mistreating us. But you'll never steal, you'll never kill our culture.
What's the deal with All Radical Records? Is that still going strong? Some people are curious because they say, well, there's some problems with smoke signals, and then people started saying that the new album, Millions of Damn Christians, is being distributed by Boner Records.
Uh-huh.
So
well, yes.
Why don't you give us a brief update on All Radical?
We worked with this man named Tabrax, as did Flipside, and as did 7 Seconds and a few other smaller bands. And I don't know, we just steered away from working with him because it just didn't get a good vibe after a while, but that's another story. But basically we wanted to pull out. Pulling out is tricky. It took us like 8 to 10 months. We didn't press anything. And then we were looking for someone who would help us and, you know, help pack us and who had credit lines. And because we had the product that can sell like this amount of units, so. And Tom Flynn was the perfect guy. He was in our hometown. Nice guy, friendly, young, drug-free. Perfect. And he's doing Verbal Abuse and Fang, Fearless Iranians. So he's like managing our label. He does all the hard work. But we still get to maintain it as our own business entity. And like he's really the manager of our business.
So if people want to write to MDC, who should they write to?
I answer the mail. Yeah. It's in there. It's MDC 2440 16th Street, number 103, SFCA 94103.
Okay, two-part question. When you named the band Millions of Dead Cops, back in 79 or so. Did you foresee the problems that would cause? And then when the name was changed to MDC, did you see the possibilities of the different various names you can make from that multi-death corporation, Millions of Damn Christians?
Yeah, I did see the problems that were going to be. We sat around with that name for a couple months. You know, we had nothing better to do than sit in Texas, you know. And should we be Millions of Cops? Should we be the MDC Stains? Should we be just MDC? Should we just be Fatal Stains, the Bloody Stains? The went through it. This is pretty much in 81. But then even knowing that it could give us a lot of shit and get us a lot of notoriety, we realized it was an important name to say. It was a very punk rock name, and we wanted to say it. And I was aware there was going to be a backlash against it to a certain degree, and there was going to be even people, you know, that are politically conscious people, you know, that were going to say, oh, that's so violent, and that's so, you know, the peace punks kind of like turned on it, and, you know, different people. And did I foresee what the backlash was going to be, or would I? Oh, did I see that we were going to make it into an acronym that we could change around? I didn't see it at the time we became Millions of Cops, but then when we started using MDC as a big logo, you know, then we just started, you know, so yeah, we're not Millions of Dead Cops. We were first going to Canada. We started joking around saying we're Matt Dixon and the Confederates, and we'd make up names. Mint Double Chocolate. Someone straight would ask us what the name of our band, and we'd all be gigantic mohawks and skinheads and this and that at the time. And it was kind of like sarcastic to make things up with MDC. And then we just kind of realized, we were sitting around, I believe it was Al and I, and we just came up with Multi-Death Corporation. And just, you know, it became a way that it can just keep going. And then after that, we just realized we can do anything we want with it, from These Damn Christians to Mourn Divine Correctly to Metal, Devil, and Coke, which is what Al's kid walks around the house saying, and we couldn't name the name. Our next album with his inspiration. So actually, it ended up being a real blessing in disguise for me, because we get to be everything Millions of Dead Cops is and was, yet without having to be, you know, locked into our name being something that's got death in it. Because I believe in karma, and I believe in, for every action, there's a reaction. And I don't think the issue of violence is so easy just to say, yes, death. You know, it's cool, you know, and just accepting responsibility as I get older, you know, for what comes out of my mouth.
Make no mistake. Between a basic choice, make no mistake. Between a basic choice, make no mistake. Between a democracy, make no mistake. Make no mistake. time to say basement. Make no mistake.
Where the inspiration for Guns for Nicaragua comes from, because I've heard some tape loops of a guy called Barry from Pissed Youth, and he used to fool around doing that type of stuff, playing the old movies back, soundtrack, stuff like that. Was he any influence on you guys, or was this just totally out of the blue, you just playing around?
Barry DeLive, who actually put in the Foghorn Leghorn's voice in Chicken Squawk, and he's one of the original Pissed Youth guys. Mm-hmm. Barry DeLive, he's now on RKL, and they're in Europe. But I have been listening to Culture Side the last year and a half, so I'm sure it fits in somewhere. His overdubbing kind of thing. So I like Culture Side a real lot, and it was not like with him in mind that it was being done and created. I've heard it compared a little bit to Butthole Surfers and to things like that. Anyone who's doing, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, like a Negative Land or, you know, anyone who's fooling around the studio, you can get compared with. But it was just trying to be spacey one, you know, offbeat, and it was trying to say something very snide. You know, the whole right wing money pitch, and then send it to us. You know?
Yeah.
This is not about all skinheads. This is about fascist fag-bashing skinheads. S has cost you so stupid. K like the KKK. I because you're an idiot.
Skinhead, I really miss you so.
about Skinhead for a little bit, because you guys started out as Skinheads, I believe.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it seems, I don't know if it's the reputation of the New York Skins that just totally took over the country, that you have to be tough and macho and kick butt, that type of thing or what, but, you know, when you started out as a Skinhead, what was your philosophy and where do you think it changed?
I didn't really have a Skinhead philosophy. I just knew, you know, it was kind of like when in Austin, Texas, it was, you know, there was different types of punks. There was people going the new wave route, and they usually did a lot of fashion, and but didn't support the harder rocking bands like ours and the Dicks and the Offenders, and you know, it was like a real battle because all the new wave, because there was only one real club in town, and there was a lot of bands, a lot of politics, and getting shows, and it was kind of weird. And it was like, first, my like symbol of getting a Skinhead was, like, to separate myself from the new wave, you know, the kind of bands that were sounding like Psychedelic Furs and that were sounding like B-52s and, you know, that crop of Texas bands. And part of it was just national defense, you know. We went around Texas with Mohawks. We had Mohawks in 79 and 80. We got challenged and beaten. I got punched on the out on the sidewalk for just standing there with a Mohawk. Guy got out of a truck, came out and just punched me in the head. And then it just seemed like, hell, I'm taking this thing off. Let them think I'm a metal case. Let them think I'm, you know, I'm nuts. And that's how my stardom, you know, Skinhead, was just was a, you know, a new punk rock hairdo, you know. And then as I got out to California, I saw it stood for a little bit more. But still at the time, you know, it was like Ian McKay was one of the more famous, and Al Baril of SST Control. And at that time, it had no, you know, Nazi thug boy, black boot, you know, creepism to it. It was totally just cool. And then somewhere in those years between 82 and 83, it just quick. Yeah, you're right. Probably the New York Lower East Side skin scene, Agnostic Front, and those crop of bands and stuff, and it just really pretty much spread pretty quickly. And in a lot of ways, it was a reaction to a lot of, I think, just maximum rock and roll. And, you know, sometimes, you know, there's the loop of when you're in a political band or in a band that wants to tell something to people, you almost become the new authority figures. And you got people who are rebelling against their teachers, the states, their parents, their crappy situations, all the lies and hypocrisy in the lot, you know, and they're just not up for believing in any dogma. Nevertheless, your dogma, you know, and I think the Maximum Rock and Roll and us and the Kennedys kind of suffered. So I think that's how a lot of it happened. It was a lot of people just don't want to be talked down to, and a lot of people saw that, okay, politics is cool and let's talk about it, but people want immediate results, and there's no immediate results, you know. I mean, occasionally there is, I mean, when something happens in politics or, you know, but by and large it's not like that. It's and a lot of people started to rebel against it. You know, just the authoritarianism of Maximum Rock and Roll, and of do this, do that. And a lot of people rebelled against it. And I think it became, you know, and then it seemed like Agnostic Front and those skinheads were rebelling very hard against it, or as hard as anyone. So they almost got glamorized and turned into heroes who, by people, you know, who didn't want to follow any rules, which was one of the basic punk rock doctrines, you know. No rules.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, not living up to the rules of all the pansy political bands, boo, 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 was cool. You know, and it took a couple of years for this country's hardcore scenes all over the country to realize it wasn't cool, that it was killing the country scenes. You know, that a lot of people I know won't go to hardcore shows anymore, you know. And people I know that came out for years just saw too many fights and just, you know, now you can't pay them, you know. I mean, to go to a hardcore show. I mean, there's a lot of great people who've hung in and fought for it and everything else, but a lot of people got other things going in their life, you know, than the fight for their local hardcore scenes. And that's really hurt hardcore, but there is it seems like new blood continually coming in. And I think the scenes all across the country have gotten better. I know where we've been in a lot of places just recently, you know, Houston and Miami, and there's really the realization that they suck. You know, the violent skinheads suck, and they really, you know, they're not cool. You know, which 2 or 3 years ago, a lot of people thought those same people were really being rebels and not so bad to me, and blah, 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 you know. And 2, 3 years down the line, everyone says those people, nobody likes them, you know. Even some skinheads don't like them, you know what I mean? You know, and even our skinhead tour manager, who's like a real skinhead, you know, he's a real skinhead, you know. Just, you know, like he just looks at them like chumps, you know. You know, you guys got nothing better to do, you know. There's, you don't get enough fights because of what you are, because you're a real rebel, that you have to start them with other people, you know. That's, you know, everyone knows that's just bullyish and creep-ish, and I think a lot of them got in trouble big time with the law, burned themselves out, and I'm just hoping that they stay away from our shows. You know, it's funny because a bunch of skinheads in California came to me and said, "We're boycotting you, Dave, from your new song, Skinhead. That's it. We're not coming to your show." And I go, "Shit, that's all it took, you know. If I knew that 2 years ago, I had written it, you know. And you guys could have spared coming to all my shows and causing all those fights and all those times I had to tell you to chill out or da-da-da, and all the times I had to play cop at the door, you know, with the security and worried that you're going to bust in. All, you know, you guys are a bunch of knuckleheads." And it seems like in our tour, a lot of skins won't be the same MDC. I used to like MDC. I liked old MDC. But now I don't like them anymore. And so I'm not going there. I'm not paying my money. And it's like, great. You know, I mean, believe me, you're $5 or whatever, $6, $7, $8. You know, keep it, you know.
It seems the skinhead bands is more leaning toward metal now. To leave in punk and go into that metal, like the combat core type of label.
Yeah, you know, Biafra always says metal's very conservative, fascist music. And I always never agreed with them, but, you know, just making that analogy, you know, it just seems like the perfect place for them to go, according to Biafra. But, well, if it means skinheads stop showing up to our shows and start going to metal shows, God bless them. And I just feel bad for the metalheads who have to deal with them, you know.
Another priest-related death. Another priest-related death. Another priest-related death.
things always amaze me about NBC is the different, I don't know, ideological backgrounds and different informational backgrounds you get from all over the world, such as chock full of what's going down in the coffee farms in, you know, South America, stuff like that. It's like every record there's something new that you guys bring up. Is this all the band, or you get information from fans all over the world that just say, hey, this is happening in South America, you guys should write a song about it, or hey, you know, the police-related deaths, so, you know, this is what's happening out here in New York City.
It's basically stuff that we get, you know. Well, how do we want to convey this information in a way that it becomes poetry and art, not political classroom? But they're basically running around in our four little brains, you know, most of the ideas. The Skinhead was, though, inspired by a woman who wrote a different version of it in Atlanta, Georgia, named Chris, and the credits were on the album. Mm-hmm. And then we changed it around and rewrote some of the lines, but kept some of the lines, and then put music to it.
What about, like, police-related death?
Pretty much was my, was through living in Texas and having that background and seeing the police and the Klan and just feeling the presence and how intolerant these officers of the law really were in all these different situations, and just knowing so much stuff and murders going on and people dying in jailhouses in Houston and people getting shot in the back and you know, for stealing hubcaps at night and, you know, just atrocious things weekly in the papers in Texas. And then just what the history of our country, growing up in a country where people are assassinated, and Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, and realizing Malcolm X and the dreams of people were being squashed. And the fact that there is a statistic of 15,000 police homicides in 10 years of the country, and just a lot of people dead due to the way that police wield guns, and maybe that there's guns in this country. The United States is much, much more violent, and their police forces kill almost 10 and 12 and 15 times more people than countries like England and Sweden. And even England, that's got a big minority population and problems and economic problems, it's much, much lower. Less people die of guns and lawmen pulling guns and shooting people than in this country. So that was easy, you know. It's all around us. It's been all around me. You know, I didn't have to go anywhere. No birdie had to tell me. I just opened my eyes.
Pardon me, President Reagan, but who are the terrorists now? This isn't a movie we're making. Who are the terrorists now? Cuts can drive, drum and drive, Tesco tanks are mobilized. When I send them food supplies, swords with a proud chip. Gun planes, naval planes, so proud the nation's name. So the dying can reuse the plane. Hey there, President Reagan, well who are the terrorists now? This isn't a movie we're making. Who are the terrorists now? Expert in excess of overkill. Who's deadly tools show goodwill? Other nations acquiesce. At Sigma we bang our chest. Why earn a family's wrath when Eastside has the last laugh? Who's the Netflix's banner? Who are the peacekeepers now? And somehow we're blaming the Russians, asking who are the terrorists now? No promise in weapons reductions, so who are the terrorists now? Those who voted for Reagan, who are the terrorists now? Everything is overtaken, cause we are the best for the rest, cause we are the chest of the terrorists now!
Do you think we'll ever have a black president, and do you think Jesse... Because I see you're wearing a Jesse Jackson button.
Yeah. I like Jesse Jackson. I met him. I gave him one of my records. We did a couple benefits for him. And registered people to vote. Had some interesting times. I don't think he's necessarily the perfect person in the whole wide world, but, you know, as far as people would say, capturing the passion of the dreams of the have-nots, as well as people who have a vision of a rainbow life and a rainbow community of peace and no nukes and no racism and people provided for their health and their welfare, I think he more catches and touches that from any politician I've ever known in my, that I've seen. And if there's any hope for, you know, a nonviolent revolution, it's going to be through believing in the dream. And I think people are growing up and growing older, and I think I want to believe that racism is on the decline, you know. I mean, there might be the reactionary Klan, and they might go up a couple percentage points, but the average kid, the average place, I want to believe, you know, is hip, you know, that racism is really shallow, that, you know, there really is a thing called economic violence being waged against the poor and lower middle class and middle class of this country, and affects white, black, brown, red, green, and orange. And I hope that is coming through. I don't know. I live in San Francisco, and we play. I find myself around a lot of people who, you know, when I tour, people that like us, you know, understand. So maybe sometimes I'm living in a bubble, you know, wanting to see something that may not be happening, but I'm hoping we're evolving. It's a drag to think we're going backwards.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
MDC here on Turmoil with John Wayne Was a Nazi. If you're just tuning in, we've been talking with Dave of MDC for the last hour or so. Dave's the lead singer of the band, original member. And I'll run down the songs we played from the band throughout the interview. Started off with Millions of Damn Christians, followed by Chicken Squawk, Missile Destroyed Civilization, Massacred and Dismembered Culture, Dead Cops with America Is So Straight, Guns for Nicaragua, Skinhead, Police Related Death, Who's the Terrorist Now, and ended up the interview with John Wayne Was a Nazi. And I'd like to thank Dave for taking the time out to talk. Their recent East Coast tour with a few bands. When I saw them, they toured with the following band I'm going to play. They're called The Witnesses. And we've got some records to give away, some MDC records to give away, and I'll be giving those away later once I think of some questions to ask. Right now, though, the band I saw with MDC, and also was on Turmoil a few weeks ago, The Witnesses with Cowboy Song from their new album, Scene of the Crime, here on Turmoil.
Rodeo. I wanna be home on the range. I wanna be end of the crack door. Play my guitar all day long. Don't wanna be misunderstood. Don't wanna be like Clint Eastwood. Whoa. Whoa.